In the video showing the killing of George Floyd, there were three officers standing by and watching as their colleague Derek Chauvin kneeled on Floyd's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. In the weeks that have followed, one of the questions protesters and activists are asking is, why is it that when police violence happens, other officers are often just standing by and watching rather than stepping in to intervene? Here's how Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins put it on Radio Boston yesterday.
What is it about the police that we allow bad actors to continue behaving badly? And A, nobody says anything about it. And B, management doesn't terminate them. And C, DAs don't go in and say, I want to look at these internal affairs or anti-corruption investigations and see if we can root out these individuals that are behaving badly or even criminally.
For more, we're joined by Irvin Staub. He's professor emeritus of psychology and founding director with UMass Amherst, the Psychology of Peace and Violence Program. A Holocaust survivor, Staub has spent his life working to understand the roots of good and evil and how acts of violence like genocide and mass killings are allowed to happen. And maybe most importantly, how to apply what he's learned to real-world interventions. One way he hopes to do that is through a police training program that focuses on empowering officers to step in and stop their colleagues from doing unnecessary harm. Irvin, thank you so much for being here today.
It's a pleasure.
Professor Staub, you've studied police violence and the role of bystanders, which includes other officers, since the Rodney King riots in 1992. And yet here we are almost 30 years later. We're still talking about the same issues. Why has this been such a hard problem to solve?
Well, there are many reasons for it. One of them is that the police culture is such that officers are expected by other officers and by their superior officers to support their fellow officer no matter what that officer does. So if that officer engages in some kind of unnecessary harmful behavior, other officers are expected either to support it actively or passively stand by, but not to go contrary to it. And that is a serious problem. And it's part of how police divides the world between us, the police, and the rest of the world. And that becomes a problem, of course.
Yeah. And so I know you've developed what is essentially active bystander training for police departments after the Rodney King incident. I know in New Orleans, they've adapted this training under a new name, EPIC, like Ethical Policing is Courageous. The New York Times describes it as teaching officers to police one another. Can you tell us a little bit about the training you've developed and the core principles behind it?
Well, the training is based on two kinds of research that I have done. One, research in laboratory environments, like at the university, where people hear sounds of distress from another room and a crash and sounds of distress. And depending on what that person says, the behavior of the other person varies a great deal. If somebody defines the situation as an emergency, as a need for help, and calls that other person for help, everybody helps. I also studied what happens in mass violence, mass killing and genocide, and that people, individuals or groups, when they engage in harmful behavior, they change as a result of their own actions so that violence evolves, becomes more intense. And it's only prohibitive influences like active bystanders who exert powerful influence that stops this evolution. So I used these to create both an understanding on the part of police officers of what leads them to engage in unnecessary violence, of what is necessary in order to inhibit that, and also what are the benefits when they do that. So one benefit, of course, is civilians are not going to be injured and harmed unnecessarily. Another benefit is police-community relations. Another thing is that active bystandership saves police officers from losing their jobs. It also is very important for ethical officers in a department where there is a lot of unethical behavior, that they will be less stressed. Once you engage them in this training, they see the benefits of it. And at least in New Orleans, they welcomed it and everybody pretty enthusiastically participated.
So I guess my question to that is, you've had training like this in development since the early 90s, and yet we haven't seen a large number of police departments take advantage of something like this. Why do you think that is?
You know, it hasn't received wide attention. The New Orleans training, because it seemed so successful, received a lot of attention in the media. And the circumstances now are such that the need for it is so crucial. We saw what happened to George Floyd and the other officers remaining passive. And a few days later, there was an event in Seattle where a police officer was doing something very similar to what the officer was doing to George Floyd, kneeling on the neck of a person lying on the ground. And another officer said to him, "Get off." And the officer did not get off, and this other officer shoved him off the neck of the person, saved that person's life, and probably saved also his fellow officer. Here is an example of passive bystandership and active bystandership. And it is so powerful when you see it in action. And, you know, we can train people not to use a particular practice and make it illegal, like chokeholds. But there are so many ways to harm people that it's not enough to make a particular practice illegal or unacceptable. You have to make all such behavior unacceptable and have to get other officers who are present to stop it. And that could really, truly transform policing in America.
I mentioned we talked to Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins yesterday, and she characterized Derek Chauvin, who kneeled on George Floyd's neck, as a bad actor. You've dedicated your life to studying good and evil in so many different contexts, including the police, obviously, but also, as you mentioned, in terms of genocide and mass killings. I'm wondering, is the ultimate goal, can you train out bad apples, or will there always be bad apples and the ultimate goal is to empower those around the bad actors to step in?
There is only one way to train out bad apples, and that is to create a department, and this training can do that, that make such behavior unacceptable. If a so-called bad apple knows that other officers will intervene and not accept such behavior, when the whole climate in that police unit changes, then it becomes much less likely that bad apples do their bad things. So it's not like necessarily the nature of that officer will change, but it is the understanding of that officer of their environment and what is acceptable and unacceptable that can change. You could say that in a department and most departments where other officers remain passive, everybody is a bad apple. Seeing an officer do really harmful behavior to someone when it is not necessary and remaining passive, that means that you are a bad apple. So this training, I believe, because some of these people are good people, but the culture and their training and their experience and all of that makes them remain passive, that turns them into bad apple. So we can transform that. We can change that. And the climate that develops can be transformative.
Yeah, that is a big lift that you're asking in terms of changing the culture across police departments across the country. And I'm curious how you're thinking about that as we're hearing this national push to defund or basically decrease funding for police departments. We've seen in Minneapolis, for example, the department was disbanded to be rebuilt. So some folks are calling for huge structural change. You're talking about a training program. I'm wondering how you see that fitting in either is that intervention in the system that exists, or do you see that, how do you see that fitting into the picture as we're thinking about structurally how law enforcement looks in this country?
Well, you know, what happened in New Orleans, the department was really bad in terms of harmful actions. There was a new superintendent. So that's a very big step to find the right person to lead a department. And the superior officers and general. So that is already transformational. But there was no disbanding. There was no huge changes. And then this training came in. So if there is the right leadership, and if there is the right training, and if officers who find such a training unacceptable and cannot go along with it, then along the way, if necessary, they are weeded out. But it may not be necessary if the huge majority support it. Now, one problem with police units, is contracts with police unions that protect officers that behave badly no matter what. I mean, a lot of these contracts don't even allow any reports of unnecessary violent behavior, unnecessary harmful behavior. So that has to change. And that's important. Now, is it necessary to dismantle police departments for that to happen? Is it necessary only for people in charge to be willing to confront police unions and change agreements and contracts so that the contracts do not allow such protection for police officers who behave badly? I think that that going together with such a training could really do what is necessary. I think that if the people in charge of a city are committed enough, if the legislature is committed enough to have community boards that actually have some power to supervise police, that would be extremely valuable. But this training could go a long way to solve the problems.
Professor Staub, you obviously, we asked you here today to talk about a very specific aspect of your research. You obviously have a very powerful story to tell. Love to have you back sometime down the road to talk more about that, if that's something you'd be interested in.
It would be a pleasure to be back, and thank you for having invited me. I enjoy talking to you.
That's Irvin Staub, a professor emeritus of psychology and founding director with UMass Amherst, the Psychology of Peace and Violence program. Staub has worked to create active bystander police training to empower officers to stop their colleagues from doing unnecessary harm.